Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
By the grace of God and with the help of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can tell you that today I'm a recovered alcoholic and that my name is Dan. Hi, guys. I hope you can all see me, okay? Because I can't see you at all. I have a problem of eyes that are very susceptible to light, and with these floodlights, I am just totally blinded. But I have a feeling that you're out there, and so here we go. It wouldn't make any difference. I've never seen a stranger in Alcoholics Anonymous anyway. I have always felt family from the time that I got here. And I walked around before we started and I saw some people that I knew and who recognized me. And that feels good. But I know how it is when I'm out there on that side of the microphone. And I always feel better if I have a little background about what it is that I'm hearing. So I'll try to be very brief, but I'll tell you that my first home group was the group that I first came to. It was Kansas City, Kansas. It didn't have a name then. Today, it's known as the Shrine on the Hill. It's my first love. And so it's very special. There is a little something more and different about that than any of the loves that come afterwards. I wouldn't recommend it as another group anywhere in this world, but I certainly would recommend it. It has been a tremendous force for good, and I am only one of the thousands of helpless, hopeless, sick alcoholics that it took to its heart and fed it back understanding and love to recovery. If you're ever within driving distance of it, don't ever fail to see it. Later, my home group was Kansas City, Missouri. I spent my first 5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous in Kansas City. I spent my next 20 years in Las Vegas, Nevada. That was my home group, Las Vegas, Nevada. The last 17 years, my home group has been in the Santa Cruz area. The last 10 years, I have been a member of the best group in all of Alcoholics Anonymous. The Thursday night men's basic step study group. You've had your plug, that's all you get. Perhaps right here I should tell you that I firmly believe that it's only by the spiritual principles as laid down in the 12 steps of recovery that I have recovered. That it's only by the spiritual principles of the 12 traditions that I have watched this beautiful fellowship grow almost from its inception and remain united all the way. It's only because of the spiritual principles as applied by the General Service Conference that we have been able to continue to be there whenever God needs us. Briefly, my service record. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the old timers, the long timers, excuse me, of my group, were very concerned about some things they were hearing and reading that seemed to be emanating from New York. Somebody was talking about something called traditions. They were firmly convinced that if they weren't on a wet drunk, they must be on the biggest dry drunk yet. And I went around mouthing those things that I heard. Probably because of that, because I was one of the youngest members of the group, because I was single, I had drunk up everything I had. Because I was still not permanently employed, I was one of three that was selected to go to the first international conference in Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. The biggest thing that had ever happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous up to that time was that first day that I realized I had gone a full day without suffering that terrible, terrible compulsion to take a drink. But I think this was as equally a moving and stirring experience. That experience in Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I mouthed some of those things that I had been hearing at home, and they came down on me all but good. Thank God. I had an opportunity to meet some of the founders and the movers and shakers of Alcoholics Anonymous of that time. One of the greatest women I have ever known, Marty Mann. And they firmly convinced me that there was no help or hope for any of us if we did not have the groups did not have the same spiritual principles to unite them that we as individuals had to recover. And they told me and showed me the tremendous need for service. And there would have to be some very loose kind of organization. And I returned home and become a part of the committee that organized the first state assembly in on my home state. In 1952, oh my God, how could I? In 1951, I was invited as a guest to panel one, the first of our general service conferences. What an experience. In 1952, I moved to Las Vegas, Nevada. There were more members of Alcoholics Anonymous in my home group that I was leaving than we knew about in the whole state of Nevada when I moved there. There was a couple of three little groups in the southern part around Las Vegas. There was an equal number in the northern part around Reno. And a lot of owners in real small groups scattered around in the rest of the state. I don't think they'd even have heard of the tradition or of the conference concept. The man in Las Vegas, when I moved there, that had more sobriety than I, 2 more years, had gotten his sobriety in Southern California, had moved to Las Vegas. And you all know him. You have met him. They are still here today, some of them. He told me, Dan, all we need is a one ad in the paper and a telephone answering service and for New York to mind their own goddamn business. So it was kind of hard for me, he being the ranking member, I guess that's the only name I want to give him. Finally, I found a man in Reno who thought as I did and who was better informed. And between us, we made a decision that Nevada, too, should be have its own state assembly and that we should be represented the same as all the other then 47 states. It was not easy. We did the best we could. The groups in Reno, if they were represented at all, it was by the groups in Northern California. The groups in Las Vegas were represented, if at all, by the groups in Southern California. We decided that because there were those who were asking questions about he and I, that perhaps it would be best if neither one of us submitted our names for any office. And we flipped a coin to see whether the first delegate would come from Southern or Northern Nevada. I don't know whether Southern Nevada won or lost, but they were the first delegate. We had a fellow that had moved up to what was then called the atomic test site. And in those days, you could not break your anonymity there and keep your clearance. So these people had to drive 90 miles down to Las Vegas to a weekly meeting. Perhaps he didn't, I'm sure to the best of his ability, represented the truth as he knew it to us. Anyway, this man was selected to be our first general service delegate. And the poor man never got to the conference in 1955, the first time that the state of Nevada was to be represented. He never made it. I'm sure that was terrible for him, but my God, what it did to us there. The whole damn thing just fell apart. Fortunately, it was possible for me to go to that convention in July of 1955, that same year, in St. Louis. The most moving experience of my life without any question at all. I only wish, I have tried many times to describe the things that I sensed, that I saw, that I felt there where the torch was being passed from the founders to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's impossible. But I have to try to tell you a little of it. Imagine, if you will, we were sitting in that convention hall in St. Louis. You could put two of them in this room. It's July in St. Louis. If any of you have ever been there, it can be uncomfortable in July in St. Louis. There was no air conditioning and nobody cared. I saw Bill Wilson with all of the people who were still alive, who had been with him up to that time, both alcoholics and our non-alcoholic friends. Men like Monsignor Dowling, Bernie Smith, Dr. Thiebaud, I could go on. But most of all, I saw that man, that tremendous man, on that stage with his wife Lois, his mother, and his sponsor, sober, and watched and felt the things he was feeling. It's beyond description. It's the high point, if there is a single high point, in my AA experience. And what I heard and felt and saw there convinced me that we had to reorganize in Nevada, that we too had to be a part of this beautiful whole. And I returned, and we did. And I represented the state of Nevada at the 7th panel of the General Service Conference. It's an experience that too is indescribable. It was not easy. It was necessary to drive to every one of those places where anyone had registered even as a loner, because we did not have the ability yet to have a state assembly. Those of you who don't know, from Las Vegas to Reno, it's about 500 miles, and there isn't anything but jackrabbits, prairie dogs, and sand. A few abandoned mining towns, but there was lots of places. I drove from Reno, Nevada, to Winnemucca, Nevada. Anybody ever hear of Winnemucca, Nevada? Oh, God. Because there was a registered group there. It turned out it was a loner. And I was a day and a half finding him. It was a Catholic priest who was hiding out in one of the buildings of the industry. If you don't know, Winnemucca is an industrial town. They manufacture and sell love experience. I could spend the rest of my time telling you about that one trip. I won't, I promise. I continued to try to grow to try to determine the difference between a bleeding deacon and an elder statesman. Perhaps it has been easy for some of you elder statesmen. With an ego like mine, it was the most difficult thing I ever did except try to get sober. But I'm learning. And you have always been a wonderful teacher for anything I've needed to learn. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous wanting only one thing: how to get and stay sober. You taught me well, but it's the very least you gave me. You let me grow up. And you became my family. And you gave me what is the bottom line for me, freedom. I thank you. When Michael called me and asked me to do this little talk today, I tried to put on the mantle of the elder statesman. I said, certainly, Michael, I've had something I've wanted to talk about for a long time, but it's best that you give me a topic. He said, sure, Dan, we'll talk it over and I'll be back to you. This was last fall. Somehow he's had trouble reaching me. The other night I was out with some General Service people who had just returned from Honolulu. And one of them was complaining a little about some of the things that had happened there. And she said, Dan, of course, this excludes you. But she said, you know, some of you people with long-time sobriety really bore the out of us always talking about the past. The next night I was out with some more of them, and they said, Dan, you know, the message you have for us is when you're willing to share the past. The paradoxes of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, without a topic, that is the topic I chose. Another paradox of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me tell you how I arrived at that. The majority of you people here perhaps were here when the youngest president of these United States was President John Kennedy in 1960. For those of you who weren't, we had a president by the name of John Kennedy, the youngest president of this country in 1960. It has been said by those who seem and claim to know that John Kennedy did some very unconventional things in the White House. I don't know about that, but I know of one very unconventional thing he did. He gathered together and invited all of the living Americans who had been awarded the Nobel Prize for their expertise in whatever their area was. I am told there were some 150 of them there that night at that banquet. And John Kennedy arose and said, never before has there been this much intelligence, this much genius ever gathered together in one room since Thomas Jefferson dined alone. That's how I feel about Thomas Jefferson. And I would like to share with you, I hope, what Thomas Jefferson had to say about the paradox of Alcoholics Anonymous. This genius, I'm sure you all remember, all of you but one, and I will remind her that he wrote our Declaration of Independence. The man had a way with words. Permit me, I want to be sure I quote it accurately. He says, laws and institutions must go hand in hand with the progress of the human mind. As that mind becomes more developed, more enlightened, as new discoveries are made and new truths are disclosed, manners and opinions change with the changes of circumstances. Institutions must also advance and keep pace with the times. He was talking about, I think, the paradox of Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12th step says to me that I am to practice these principles in all of my affairs. Principles being unchanging truth. The principles of the 12 steps, unchanging truth. The principles of the 12 traditions, unchanging truth. And Thomas Jefferson says to me that we will wither and die if we are not able to change. And the proof that it is possible for people and institutions to change with more knowledge, with more truths, with the restraints of principles. The evidence is all around us. I attended that first international conference in Cleveland, and we filled one little section of that baseball park that Sunday afternoon. They said there were 3,000 of us. I think they were counting shadows, but I thought there was 300,000 of us. It wouldn't have looked very big to those of you who went to Montreal and saw 50,000 at that convention. I'm told some 70,000 expected in Seattle. The proof is all around us. The paradox that we can change and practice spiritual principles. Perhaps you don't know. Let me tell you. We have experienced some changes without changing the meaning of any spiritual principle. My first book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the word in the 12th step was spiritual experience. And almost ever since then, it has been spiritual awakening. The sixth tradition, as I learned it, had a relative term, they said, our spiritual purpose. They saw fit to change it to primary purpose for some people's comfort. There was one other relative term that was added. It was taken out, wasn't it? A sincere desire. Now it's only a desire. That is the only changes I know of in a single word of the 164 pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, and the 12 traditions, but yet we have been able to grow, to advance, to be of God's service by the changes in consciousness, the changes in new truth in consciousness, the changes in new truth, new knowledge. We were promised that more would be revealed. If you don't know, it is almost impossible to make any changes in our traditions. To do so, all of the groups in this whole world would have to be notified in writing. They would have to have 6 months to consider it. And they would all have to answer in writing, 3/4 of them with approval. Forget it. But you see, we don't need to. The proof is here. The proof is here. Things do advance. My God, even the American Medical Association. They too can learn and become more enlightened. 50 years ago, I proved beyond any question of a doubt that once you're an alcoholic and then any other mood-altering chemical is introduced into your system, and it makes no difference how or with or without a prescription, you are immediately addicted. I spent years proving that. Just a few years ago, the man I believe who has treated more alcoholics clinically than any man alive today, Dr. Pirsch, the founder of the Naval Program, the Long Beach Hospital, you've all heard of him, pronounced that very enlightening statement some 50 years later, but it was his firm conviction and belief from his experience that any alcoholic who introduced any other mood-altering chemical into the system would be immediately addicted. Now they're saying so. And the most important thing is they're telling their own doctors what they have tried to hide for years. That an alcoholic problem is alcoholism and it's a disease. They say it. If you want to see it, come let me show it to you. More enlightened. More knowledge, more truth, and there will be changes. I don't know, but one day they may not say from the things I'm seeing to some prominent people today, she just came out of treatment, you've all read about her. She found that once you were addicted to a mood-altering chemical, you were immediately addicted to alcohol when it was introduced. She ended up in a treatment center. We will know more. And I am begging you, I am imploring you, keep an open mind. Fully 75% of the people in that first group that I came to did not believe that anyone who still had their own teeth and a hockable watch could possibly be ready to quit drinking. And there I was, a helpless, hopeless, sick alcoholic, 35 years of age, with all of my worldly possession in a little paper bag, the soles of my feet, the palms of my hands, bleeding. I couldn't be ready to quit drinking. You see, with more knowledge, with more truth, with more experience, we can change. We have two members in my home group. One of them, who was 29 years of age in November, celebrated his 10th year of sobriety in February. We learn. We can change. I was an Alcoholics Anonymous when you had to have the skin of an alligator and be terribly desperate to come out of the closet as a woman alcoholic. It was goddamn near impossible. And it wasn't the members of AA who drove them away or made it so difficult. And I'll not go any further than that. Well, I will say, we didn't have Al-Anon in those days. We had an organization called the Women's Auxiliary. God bless them. They made good coffee and cookies. With more knowledge, with more truth, we can, we have changed with the restraint of traditions. There is a little line, this will be personal, but this is the way I feel today. For over 40 years, I have asked my loving God to help me be in the right place at the right time, to say and do the right thing that will be of the most help to me and my fellow alcoholics. And lately, I have added a little to that. And if any of you feel as I do, I would ask you each day to join me in asking for God's continued grace and blessing, that our fellowship can continue to be in the right place at the right time. For those people who are suffering terrible and have not yet a place to go, all I ask you, remember when you came to Alcoholics Anonymous, they told you there was no muss. But they told me, I hope they did you, there were three essentials: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I'm telling you that it's been my experience that one of the things that has made this wonderful fellowship continue to advance, to grow, to succeed, to stay with the times, has been its ability to keep an open mind. Somewhere they talk to us about condemnation without investigation. I implore you, keep an open mind. It's a beautiful day. I think we can all enjoy it out there. I think you've given me my chance. You've heard me. I haven't asked you to agree with me. I've just asked you to listen to me, and you have. And for that, I thank you. And I'm going to reward you by not going on for another hour and a half as I had planned. And like John Kennedy, I'm going to offer a toast. I would like to offer a toast to all of the people everywhere who have ever carried the torch of service. I'd like to tell you, for all of those who meant to and forgot to, thank you. I would like to tell you, for all of those who wanted to, but couldn't or wouldn't, that we love you. I would like to tell you, for those who are no longer here, that I think they would want me to say to you, well done. You have guarded our principle that our common welfare must come first. And you have delivered the torch with us united. I would like to offer a toast to those of you who are just coming or are still preparing yourself to carry the torch of service. I say to you, follow the clear examples that have been set for you. Carry this torch with the dignity and the pride that it so justly deserves. Fulfill your commitments with unconditional love and humility. And then there will always be that understanding, compassionate, loving hand of Alcoholics Anonymous there whenever anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. God bless you all.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.